This is Invest Talk, above average investing for the average investor. Invest Talk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. And now, here's KPP President, Money Manager, Steve Peasley.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to our Friday Invest Talk. Is a reverse mortgage the best solution? Do you have a question about IPOs? Maybe you're just worried if your portfolio is open to too much risk. We're here to face our money fears, money questions, everybody. We want to do a head-on. We're here every day, Monday through Friday, 4 to 5, live Pacific time, up and down California, streaming on InvestTalk.com. And, of course, you can subscribe to the podcast, and you can listen to whenever you want to. In today's premium newsletter that goes out every Friday, the e-newsletter, in the Consumer Watch section, I wrote about scams. From time to time, I write about scams. And it's hard enough to manage your money in today's economy, but someone deliberately trying to take it away from you, it just is so irritating to me. I feel we need to do what we can to spread the word about these kinds of scams. A couple of weeks ago, I wrote about scams that targeted grandparents or just older folks in general. Those scams range from fake lottery winnings to general contractors not doing the work that they're paid to do, or fraudsters pretending that they're IRS, or that your children or grandchildren need money to be bailed out of jail. Those are the kinds of things that happen all the time. The Treasury General for Tax Administration, which oversees IRS, has received 90,000 complaints about the scam with the IRS, with 1,100 victims being duped out of $5 million. The bottom line, if you get a call from someone who says they're from the IRS, tell them you'll call them back. And then look up the number. Don't listen to them giving you a phone number. Look up the number and call them back and ask the question, is there any outstanding tax situations for you? The IRS will answer that. Now, if you'd like to know more about it, be sure to read this week's newsletter, by the way. That's a reminder to subscribers and a reminder to you to subscribe. To do that, all you do is go to investtalk.com and you can sign up for it. Now, let's get down to the business, answering your questions. Our listener line is open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and you can ask a question whenever it comes to you at 888-99-CHART.
Hello, Justin or Steve. This is Chris from Mississippi. I'd like to have your opinion on PAY, see what you think. It seems to have dipped below its 50-week moving average, and I think it's a good sector with the new happenings in chip credit cards and maybe point of sale using cell phones and that sort of thing. I'd like you to take a look at it and see what you think. If this is a good buy point, you guys have a good weekend. Thank you very much. I'll be listening to you with my coffee in the morning.
Okay. This is Verifone Systems, Inc. PAY is the symbol. Out of San Jose, provides point of sale electronic payment processing devices for debit cards, credit cards, and mobile phone payments. So it's a point-of-sale electronic payment processing devices. Okay, so you go into the store, you want to pay with a credit card or your cell phone, they have the device that allows that to happen in the store, and that's what they do. The problem you have here, and it's pretty clear, that sales have been sputtering the last year. A few quarters ago, they were down 10% or so, and then the recent quarters are up 9%. Recent quarter up 9%, quarter before that up 2%. So sales have been sputtering, but earnings for almost the last 2 years have been going down every quarter. Now, they do say that earnings, because they earned $2.74 in 2012, 2013, $1.44, 2014, $1.45 is the estimate, and 2015, it's going to be $1.96, so it's going to go up, and the stock has moved up from a low in October of around 22 to a high of about 37, and today it's at 34. And the last couple of months has been coming off that high. I think it's overpriced. This is what I think. $1.96, what is that worth? You're going to give it a 10 PE, that's $20 stock. 15% PE, that's a 30. Should it earn a, have be entitled to a 30 PE based on next year's earnings? I guess. But is the earnings going to go up 35% next year? They better. Or else it's not worth where it is now. So it's about properly valued right here based on next year's earnings. And if it can continue to grow the sales, this is about where it's worth, what it's worth, right where it is, about $34. If you're going to buy it and you really want to buy it, I'd be more comfortable in the $30 to $31 range because there's a lot of support in there. And that's where I'd be more comfortable buying it. But I'm not. This is not a stock I would buy. I wouldn't. It has pretty decent debt. Mutual funds are pretty steady, about the same amount. There's nothing, unless something's coming out that's exciting, I'll tell you this, insiders have been buyers recently. March of this year, there was an insider buy, so I don't know. Factoring in the boomer bubble. We're talking about baby boomer bubble. As the baby boomers begin to retire, effects on workforce participation and consumer spending levels will be profound. You know how the workforce participation is at record lows? One of the reasons is because baby boomers are retiring, more and more people. It's not just because we have a job market that's bad. No, not necessarily. And that's going to be one of our talking points today. Also, Citigroup says the economy has entered its scary phase. Phase three in the economic cycle, where bubbles are prone to crash. Okay, so what does that mean? Citigroup, their analyst, their main guy says this. We'll talk about that. Should you rebalance your portfolio in retirement? There's arguments that maybe you shouldn't. So we're going to discuss that. And something that's more fun. Fast food healthy offerings that died. Fast food companies offering healthier food that you may not even heard of. One of them I'm sure you've heard of, but I don't think the others. Why? Because I never heard of them. So maybe we could talk about those kind of fun facts there. What happened in the market today? The Dow's down 51. The Nasdaq was up 12, and the S&P was flat. Why? Well, the market was up. Not big, but up in the morning until the news came out that Ukraine blew up, some Russian, not Russian-backed troops, Russian-backed anything, but actual Russian troops, caravans or vehicles or something, because we don't have all the full details, but actual Russian vehicles that were in Ukraine, coming into Ukraine, already in Ukraine, and then Ukraine bombed them. That came out today. So that Russia-Ukraine issue is still, on the table. Everybody was thinking it's calming down, but maybe it's not. Yeah, I don't think it's going to calm down. This is what I think. I think we're being played by Putin. I think Putin will calm it down when he thinks it's politically smart to do it, then reheat it up, and then calm it down, with his intention eventually just to take over the Ukraine, one way or another. And he's already taken over part of it, the Crimea. It's already his. It's already in Russia's hand. Just like Georgia. People didn't blink an eye when he took over Georgia a number of years ago. Georgia was an independent state, remember? Not anymore. So those are the things that happened to the market today. The market has been coming off its lows, for about 3 weeks to a month, a little over a month on small caps, that it was falling. And now this week, they kind of came off that low. So today kind of put a dent in that a little bit because of what happened in Russia. So market's about halfway recovered from its recent highs made in July. Except for the small caps. They are nowhere near that much recovery. And the Dow hasn't recovered that much. But the S&P has. So the question is, are we done with this correction? Can you call this a correction when it was like 5%, maybe 6%, the same amount as we've had the last couple of few corrections we had, or less? Maybe. It's possible. I don't feel it is. But it could be. Yeah, no one has a crystal ball. This is InvestTalk. There's a group of stocks trading out there what we call pink sheets. Do you know what that is? They are generally referred to as penny stocks. Many would-be amateur investors believe you can get rich trading these stocks. And I wrote a special piece about these for our InvestTalk insiders, about these penny stocks. You can sign up for free and read it if you want at InvestTalk.com.
As InvestTalk continues now, we remind you of some of the resources available to our InvestTalk insiders. Read Steve's info sheet on penny stocks. Become an insider. Sign up for free right now on InvestTalk.com.
888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. As boomers slow down, will the economy slow down too? Okay, just to give you some numbers, it's always fun to give you some numbers. Boomers are considered those people born between 1946 and 1964. And since I was born in 1952, I fit right in there. There's 65 million of us. And that's not counting the 11 million or so who died, passed away. And that's how many we're talking about. Okay, the youngest boomers are they're born in 1964. Four, the youngest ones, will turn 67. And they'll start collecting benefits in 2031. So, that's about 20% of the U.S. population. Okay, that's going to be about 20% of the U.S. population. And so the question is, what impact are they going to have on the economy? They're already having an impact. You know, they're spending less on food. They're spending less on clothes. Old people do. I know because I'm old. And I do spend less on food and clothes. Okay, and we don't have to have the latest, greatest gadgets. And, you know, we don't have to have those, brand new cars. My cars are pretty old. But, so they're obviously having an impact. And it will have an impact on labor participation rates. You know, they're going to probably go down. Okay, before they start moving back up again. Or they may not. I mean, they may not move back up. I don't know. But the bottom line is that baby boomers are going to have to work longer because they don't have the money saved. So they're going to be productive longer, older. It's just the way it is. The baby boomer generation is going to be the longest lived generation we've had. They're going to live a lot longer. They don't have the money to live a lot longer, so they're going to have to continue working. And that is hurting the younger generation finding good jobs because the baby boomers are holding on to them. Once we start in earnest retiring, and just so you know, there's quite a bit of us. I mean, there's like 250,000, I think it is, 250,000 of us a month turning retirement age. But the problem is that don't mean we're going to retire. It does not mean we are going to retire. Many of us cannot. Many of us are going to be forced to because of health reasons. But we are going to have an impact. That is going to have an impact. I don't think it's going to be as major impact as everybody thought it was, simply because baby boomers are going to have to work a lot longer. See, 10 years ago, 15 years ago, 20 years ago, the stat was, okay, baby boomers are going to retire at 65. They're going to stop working at that age because now they're going to be retired, so they're not going to be costing the economy. But that was based on everybody retiring. Not everybody, hardly anybody's going to retire at that age. It's not going to happen. Remember, the full benefits of Social Security won't kick until 67 because they changed the age. Anyway, it's kind of interesting. You might want to just start thinking what industries benefit. Of course, health industry comes to mind immediately, right? Try our free personal risk analysis tool. It's free, risk analysis. It can really open your eyes, and you may learn something about yourself in that process. It's very simple. The system also allows you to see your present portfolio matches your personal risk tolerance. So you take the little quick test, like 5 questions. Gives you a score of your risk. Put your portfolio in. There you go. This is InvestTalk.
Thanks again for subscribing to our podcast. Coming up on the next Invest Talk, real estate versus gold. Which is better? That's our talking point for the next program. We hope you'll listen to that. And be sure to try our free risk analysis tool. It'll tell you a lot, and it's right there on our website. Just look for the blue box on the homepage and free personal risk analysis right there on investtalk.com. Invest Talk continues on this Friday, real estate versus gold. Which is better? That's our talking point for the next program. We hope you'll be there then. Steve is open to your questions today. 888-99-CHART is how to reach him right now.
Our podcast listeners from all over the world download our program. If you'd like to join them, you can do it by subscribing for free at iTunes. If you have a question for us during the podcast, before or after, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, you can still call 888-99-CHART.
Hi, my name is Dave. I'm a recent graduate of college, and I have about $15,000 in cash, about $2,000 in bonds, and about $6,000 in mutual funds through American Fund. Since I'm only 24 years old, I'm trying to decide what I should be doing at this point. Do I slowly start to enter the market? Should I maybe save that money for a down payment on a home? What advice can you give for someone that has a long period until retirement and kind of wants to earn some extra cash?
Well, I definitely would invest it and maybe open up a Roth IRA and a regular IRA. I don't know if you're working and you have a 401k, and you didn't mention if you were married or single. Said you were just out of college, so I'm assuming you're single. So buying a house, maybe not be, starting a family and having a place to live, maybe not be the first thing you think of. Maybe I think it would be smarter to start putting that money in the market, maybe dollar cost average into the market over time, over the next few months. Putting that money into the market, not out of. If you're saving for a house, and that's money you earmarked for a house, don't put that, don't expose that to the stock market. See, in my mind, that's what we call safe money, and I don't want to lose it. It's not like we want to go to Vegas and double it and see if we can make more and more money. No, this is money that is geared for a certain specific purpose, and that purpose is for a down payment of the house. I need to grow that money on a down payment house by just contributing more money into that little pot. But as I said, you sound young, and maybe I don't think that necessarily is the goal right now. The goal right now is maybe start growing your portfolio for retirement. And I'm talking about IRA, Roth IRA, if you don't have a 401k. If you have a 401k and employers are matching, of course, that's free money, and you want to maximize that. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. Citigroup says the economy has entered in its scary phase three, where bubbles tend to build and crash. So that's what Citigroup is saying. They're talking about an economic cycle, and they have four phases. They, in their economics, have shown four phases in the economic cycle. And in the third phase, they were saying that credit goes up and equity goes down. Now, but they don't say where we are in that third phase. And in the fourth phase, everything goes down. But they don't know where we are. What part of the warning signals, they say, is a lot of IPOs. And they had like five or six warning signals, but only one or two of them have been triggered. So I don't think they feel that we're very deep in the third phase. I don't think they think this is stretched at this point. Stretched the economy, the stock market. I get the feeling in the article. They don't say it, but I got the feeling as I'm reading it. They think they're pretty early in the third phase, so it's just something to watch. And this is like any other expert out there. They don't know. I know I say that quite often on the show. The experts are always wrong, and they don't really know, because no one really knows. For instance, I had it pointed out to me today, I don't know how many times someone's tried to point this out to me, that I've been wrong on interest rates, because I've said the interest rates are probably going to rise. I still think they are. But they've fallen a lot this year. They've come off their rise. Remember, they rose from the middle of last year till the end of last year? If you look at the mortgage rate, you can see it. Mortgage rate was low. A 30-year fix was 3.35, and it got up to about 4.5 or so, maybe a little bit more than that by the end of the year. And now it's maybe 4.25, somewhere around there for a 30-year fix. So interest rates haven't done anything. They went up, and they've been kind of coming down somewhat this year. Now, interest rates in the long term are going to go up. And I will tell you that that is going to happen. And you could say I'm wrong all you want, because I do have people saying that, but they are still going to go up. I have said for quite some time they're just going to go up very slow. They're going to go up very slowly. Because it's not a straight-up proposition. It's going to up and down, but I think it's going to be very slow because I don't feel our economy is all that strong. I don't think the world economy is very strong. Europe is starting to look like they're going back into recession to me. Look at the numbers. Look at the GDP numbers. Looks like it's recession to me. Italy is definitely in a recession. France had flat GDP. Germany is falling. The growth of their GDP is falling and was down 0.2 or 0.3 in the last quarter. They shrank 2 or 0.3 in the last quarter. That's the first quarter. And a recession is not defined unless you have two quarters in a row. And Germany's economy is 20 to, I've read it earlier this week that 30%, but I think it's been 20-30% of the entire EU economy, and their second quarter GDP shrank by 0.2. And do you think the sanctions against Russia and the Russia sanctions against the EU are going to help growth? I don't think so. But I do think that ECB, European Central Bank, Draghi, is going to try to do some kind of QE to try to stimulate growth. I think that's coming. I'm in Northern California next week, meeting with a limited number of our listeners for individual retirement account reviews. We still have one slot left in San Jose on the 21st. Then I'll be in San Francisco the next day at the Hilton Union Square. To take advantage of the August dates, just go to investtalk.com and click on Make an Appointment.
You're listening to Invest Talk. The term ask is the lowest price a seller is willing to accept when selling a security. Bid is the highest price a buyer is willing to accept when purchasing a security. Got questions about terms? Talk to Steve about it. Call 888-99-CHART.
Don't hesitate to call us with any of your questions or financial questions or share in your investing experience. Love to hear from you. Tell us about the mix in your portfolio if you want. I like that. 888-99-CHART. You can reach us anytime.
Yes, my name is Art. I am from Pasadena. My question is about ETF. We know that all ETFs is not managed fund. But my question is about the ETF that, let's say, top holding on the ETF, one of the stock every day going down, down, down. Do they make any changes on the holding or just leave it as is till that stock, let's say, it's going to disappear? And my second question is, maybe this is a stupid question, but I don't know the answer. There is some ETFs that I never heard the name. I mean, is it possible that those ETFs, I mean, the owner or the managed fund can cash it all the money and they disappear? It can be like that. Is there any regulation about that? Thank you. Bye.
Okay, the first question, the answer is the ETF generally do not change. I want to state that from right now. They don't change because they're going down, a stock is going down or up in value. But most ETFs track some type of index. Some of them, many of them don't, but most of them do. And the index changes stocks all the time. The S&P changes quite often. So when that index changes, so will that stock in that ETF change. They'll match it. So that does mean that there's changes. And an ETF is an exchange-traded fund. It's traded on the indexes, the exchanges, the New York the New York Stock Exchange or the NASDAQ, wherever. And they do have rules. No one can just take the money. Because remember, think about where the money's going. There's an exchange of money when you buy an ETF for shares of the underlying equity. So you own that equity. You own that percentage of that equity. So, you know, could there be fraud? I'm sure there could be. I just don't know how it would work. I'm not, you know, there are lots of rules and regulations to prevent that, but that doesn't mean it can happen. But probably not. I don't think you have much of a risk there. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. Should you rebalance your portfolio in retirement? This has been a recent debate going back and forth because it's always been, as you get older, you should always add more bonds and less stock and reduce your risk. Well, I'm not disagreeing with the reduce your risk philosophy. I'm not disagreeing with that. But I am disagreeing. Remember we talked earlier about baby boomers. People thinking, you know, when you retire, you should just rebalance, or as you approach retirement, start to get more conservative. Well, I'm not arguing with that. Maybe you should, but it depends on you, and it depends on when you're going to stop working. It shouldn't be an age, in other words. It shouldn't be, well, 65, I'm going to do this. Not necessarily if you're going to work till you're 70. You know, and even then, there's an argument that your returns will be better if you have more exposure to the stock market. If you're going to try to stay ahead of inflation, if you're going to start, you know, if we are in a cycle of interest rates rising slowly over time, bonds generally don't do as well in a rising interest rates environment, as well as the stock market. So it's a number of questions. You got to stay up with inflation. How long are you going to live? When exactly are you going to retire? You just can't say automatically rebalanced. Give me a certain formula. That's why I don't like those target dated funds, because they're going to do whatever they're going to do based on a certain age and date of that target date, and it kind of ignore the reality of what's going on in the market, in the economy. They just ignore it. And I just think that's not a good way to invest. I really don't. Time for Invest Talk 101. How do I get the best deal on life insurance? Now, if you have dependents and need life insurance, and the keyword here is need. If you need life insurance, need. What does that mean? Well, to me, dependents is one. You have a mortgage and a wife and children. You know, you got to have life insurance. You know, if you're the sole breadwinner, and, you know, you're going to need life insurance, but maybe you don't need it when you're 65. So anyways, if you have dependents and you need it, chances are that you'll be paying premiums for years or decades for life insurance. So if you start young, you can often lock in very low long-term premium rates. Younger policyholders represent the lowest risk to insurance companies, so they naturally get the lowest premium charge. Talking when you're in your 20s and 30s. But that doesn't mean every young adult needs coverage. The guy we just spoke, he just got out of college. What does he need life insurance for? There's no need. And be sure to shop around. Compare multiple competitors for the best deal. Insurance companies, they're always competing. It's a healthy environment of competition, and you want to get the best deal you can. So go to a broker who can get you different life insurance. And be very careful, because not all brokers will shop around. Broker, remember, is supposed to represent you. An agent represents the insurance company. In other words, he's an employee of the insurance company, basically. And a broker is supposed to go out there and broker your account to all different insurance companies. But, remember, I was in the insurance business. Some brokers, you know, will want to push you to a particular carrier because they get bonuses, they get a higher commission, on and on and on. So you got to be careful. You got to make sure you're getting truly competitive bids. The details do matter. Read the fine print. And that's Invest Talk 101. If you have a question on this topic or any money matter, it's time to check in. Give me a call. 888-99-CHART or make it a personal note if you want. You can send me an email directly. Just click on the Contact Steve on InvestTalk.com.
Would you like a list of commodity ETFs? These allow investors to gain exposure to various areas of the commodity industry. It's yours free when you're an InvestTalk insider. Join up for free right now on InvestTalk.com.
afternoon. My name is Derek, and I'm a podcast listener from Toledo, Ohio. I had a question about the stock, Michael Kors, K-O-R-S. I currently own the stock. I just bought it a little while ago, and I was looking for an alternative growth issue, something that I could add to my portfolio instead of some of these high multiple tech names. I understand Apple, you know, that doesn't qualify for that, but I was just wondering how you would feel, Steve, about that sector, the luxury brand or branded apparel sector. For example, Michael Kors, or another one would be Ralph Lauren. Thank you for your input. Love your show. Bye.
So Michael Kors is K-O-R-S, symbol, out of Hong Kong. I don't know if you knew that. Did you know that? It's out of Hong Kong. Markets luxury apparel, accessories, footwear under the Michael Kors and Michael Kors names. And it is a very nice growth name. It's growing very nicely. It's growing 40 to 50% per quarter its sales. Has been doing that for well over 2 years. Okay? It's going to make $4.06 this year, $4.79 last year. I mean, next year. Last year, it made $3.22. So 25% earnings growth as well. No debt. Management owns 10%. Mutual funds have been buyers from 819 funds a year ago to 1,145 now. And insiders are buying. The stock has gone down from February to today. It was $100 in February. Today, it's at $78. The question in your mind is this a good price? Well, it's a $78 stock, going to make $479, growing 20 to 40% sales. I think that's pretty reasonable. I think it's very reasonable. Return equity is 46%. That's huge. I think it's a good buy at this price, $78. And it looks like a lot of support right around that area, $78 to $80. So this is where you would buy it. And generally speaking, in the summer is when you want to buy retail kind of clothing places, because you got the back to school and you got Christmas. And then generally speaking, that's when you want to buy these kinds of companies. And this is luxury, and luxury kind of holds up pretty well. I mean, it can be faddish, but Michael Kors is not that. I don't think it's a fad or anything like that. So, yeah, I think this is a good place. Now, it could go down, but, you know, you bought it at a low price, and I think if the market falls, this will fall with it. But it has the numbers to support it and to support a higher price. I think it's worth closer to, you know, $100 at that kind of growth rate. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. Fast food, healthy offerings that didn't make it, that died. These are kind of fun. And one of them, there's only one that I remember, by the way. The first one will go with Dairy Queen. And probably no one remembers The Breeze. Do you remember The Breeze? That was a low-fat, cholesterol-free, frozen yogurt drink. Probably trying to be like a milkshake. Didn't last 5 minutes, and just didn't work. Wendy's. Okay, have you ever heard of the tomato surprise at Wendy's? I never heard of it. It was a tomato with cottage cheese and pineapple. Anybody ever eat one of those things? This is all their efforts trying to be healthier, right? Trying to be less caloric. Now, this one I did hear. Burger King tried sliders twice that failed. Sliders. These are small little hamburgers. Tried them twice. Once in 1987, didn't work. And again, 2009, didn't work. And the whole concept was, well, to eat less and you'll have less calories. But they're little hamburgers. No one wants little hamburgers. They want big hamburgers. That's what works. Big hamburgers. You don't go to a fast food to eat healthy. That's what I say. You just don't. Now, McDonald's, maybe you remember the McLean. I do remember the McLean. I mean, vaguely remember that. It was in 1991, and it was all about being less fat in the patty. 9% fat. That was 1996. I remember that. And the last one we'll talk about is the Hula Burger. The Hula Burger. McDonald's again. The Hula Burger. In Hawaii, McDonald's came out with a Hulaberger, and Ray Kroc had a bet with some other gentleman, and I don't remember, who could come up with a new product that would last for specifically Catholics on Friday. In other words, no meat. So Ray, guess who came up with the Hulaberger? That was Ray Kroc's idea. The other guy came up with a different idea called the fish sandwich. The deep fried fish sandwich with the sauce. They still sell that. Guess who won that bet? That was in the 1960s, by the way. The Hulaberger. I thought that was funny. Never heard of it. Never saw it. But it was only, to be honest, it was sold in Hawaii. Let's answer another question before our break. 888-99-CHART is how to reach us anytime. Ignacio called from Sherman Oaks.
Hey, how you doing? My question was regarding the stock EOG, which is EOG Resources. The ticker symbols are EOG. I just wanted to check out the stock. It looks like it would be a great stock to maybe buy, but I'm not sure if it's something I should have bought maybe a while back. Either way, I'd love to get thoughts about it, and thank you. Goodbye.
Okay, this EOG Resources out of Houston engaged in the production and marketing of crude oil and natural gas in the United States, Canada, Trinidad, UK, and China. Okay, they're going to make $5.66 a share this year. That's up 38% from last year. And then $6.48 next year, up another 14%. The PE is 21. The stock is selling for 106. So that means that it's pretty pricey. Pretty pricey, but it is a very good company. Its return equity is 16%. The sales growth has been in the 20 to 30% range, except for the most recent quarter, it was only 9% growth. But before that, 20, 24, 20, 32, 20, you know, those kind of numbers. So it looks like a pretty, it's a very good company. Doesn't have hardly any debt, very well run, and it peaked at about 100 and oh, probably close to 117.50 or so, and now it's at 106. It's been falling for the last month and a half or so. You need to let it continue to fall. Let it fall to wherever it's going to go. And if you're looking at the energy sector, what you're going to see is a lot of falling going on because oil prices are coming off. Because world economy is shrinking. So this is a commodity. Remember we talked about commodities yesterday. It looks like to me commodities are, you're going to get an opportunity to buy commodities. You're going to get a good opportunity to buy them at a lower price. And EOG is one of them. But not yet. What you want to do is wait to see it fall. Wait till it stops falling. Wait till it trades sideways or starts and then starts back up. That's when you pick it up. You try not to, what we call, catch a falling knife. If it's still falling, let it continue to fall. But EOG is a very good company. EOG is the symbol. EOG Resources is the name out of Houston, Texas. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. Listen to Invest Talk. We had some economic numbers out today. We didn't have a lot out this week. Not in the United States, anyways. But we had some very important numbers coming out of Europe. And Italy, France, and Germany, the three biggest economies, all three, GDP growth, Italy fell, Germany fell, France stayed flat. That's the core of the EU, biggest economies. Not looking very good. Not looking good at all. This is Invest Talk. I'm Steve Peasley. Give me a call. We'll be right back.
Thanks for being a podcast subscriber, and we do want to hear your investing experiences. We've all grown over the years through our experiences, good and bad. You get to be anonymous, and the rest of us will enjoy knowing that we're not the only one to make a turn when maybe we should have gone straight. So we hope you'll join us on the podcast. Thanks for listening. This is Invest Talk, 1 hour of conversation about your money. Talk to Steve about any money matter as we move into the final segment of the day. 888-99-CHART is how to reach him right now.
888-992-4278. Give me a call. Love to talk to you. Have you heard about Apple's new Sapphire screen? We'll call it. There's a big factory made in Mesa, Arizona. Spent $700 million. It's not Apple's factory, but Apple financed the factory, and all the production from that factory is going to go into that new iPhone, Apple iPhones. And it's a screen made out of sapphire. Sapphire meaning you're thinking of the precious stone. It's a synthetic precious stone. It's one of the hardest substances out there. Not as hard as diamond, but very, very hard. Harder than the Gorilla Glass. It's very impossible to scratch it. Well, maybe not impossible, but very difficult to scratch. And the interesting part, this is going to be the new iPhones, okay? The iPhone 6 announced. And it costs a lot more than the Gorilla Glass. I mean, like four times as more. So it's whether we don't know what they're going to do. Is it an upscale, up-priced item? We don't know that. But the interesting thing here, if you think about it for 5 minutes, did you hear me say this factory, $700 million factory, is in Mesa, Arizona? Built in Mesa, Arizona. Not in China, not in Vietnam, not in Taiwan, nowhere in Asia, here in the U.S. I think that's the most important part of that whole news, in my personal opinion. I think that's something we all better be paying attention to. Anyways, is this going to hurt Corning? Corning is the inventor of Gorilla Glass, which all iPhones are made, and most phones are. There are phones, by the way, made out of sapphire glass now. But these are really upscale, super expensive phones. And this one factory that's built in Mesa, Arizona, that's producing, will produce as much sapphire as the next 100 makers of sapphire combined. All the other makers, 100 of the top 100 combined. Tells you how big this thing is going to be. Now, what if it becomes real popular? Is it big enough? Is it big enough? That I do not know, my friends. I just don't know. It's kind of interesting, though. Don't you think? And, you know, I want you to start paying attention. No one's really talking about it. It's not on anybody's radar, it seems like, about high-end manufacturing coming back to the U.S. Because it's happening. There's a number of factories going on, big factories, big projects, billions of dollars worth of liquefied natural gas terminals going on in the Louisiana area. Billions of dollars are being spent to build these things. You don't hardly hear anything about it. We try to answer your questions no matter when you ask them. Here's a call from our 24-hour listener line, 888-99-CHART.
Hey, thanks for your show. Thinking about buying Union Pacific, UNP. Wondering at what price would you get into it, and what do you think about the Union Pacific? Thank you very much, Steve.
Union Pacific, UNP, of course, that is the railroad. It has almost 32,000 miles of rail in 23 states in the western United States. You know, UNP is a symbol. You know, Warren Buffett bought a railroad a few years ago, and he thought that was a good idea. And when he thinks something's a good idea, I kind of perk up my ears. So actually, I think the railroad business is pretty good because they're transporting a lot of oil, and we've all heard about the horror stories and stuff. But I think that that's not going to stop. I think it's going to just continue to be more and more transportation in oil. And I think Union Pacific, the numbers are a little, the company's a little expensive. It's going to make $5.54 this year and $6.33 next year, so it's growing its earnings by 14-15%. But sales are only growing up between 7 and 10%. And a year ago, they were only growing 5, so they're picking up their growth a little bit. But does it justify a $101 stock? I don't think so. It seems expensive. It's right at the high end of its 5-year P.E. range, and it's right near the 52-week high. And this is what we call a triple top on our charts. It's gone there 3 times now, and it seems to have trouble breaking through. I think it's a little pricey. I like it. I would buy it, but not at this price. It's just too expensive, right? Before we close for the day, a reminder to try our free personal risk analysis tool. It can really open your eyes about your tolerance for risk. Just look for the free personal risk analysis on InvestTalk.com. Thanks for listening today. I'm Portfolio Manager Steve Peasley. On behalf of Justin Klein and everybody at KPP Financial, we hope you'll join us again on Monday. Good night, everybody.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are principals of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, which retains all rights.